Paddy Power, as much a part of Irish football as hoofing it up to Johnny Walters.
Busy evening in the Premier League continues. Johnny Ward alongside me, so we're going to take the half-time from Anfield to kick things off. Shane Pinnington's watched the first 45 minutes there.
It's Liverpool 4, Everton 2 at the break. Liverpool flying out the blocks with Divock Origi slotted home a Mane pass. And then it was 2-0 when Mane played in Shaqiri, who slotted past Pickford after 16 minutes. Everton then pulled one back through Michael Keane before Liverpool made it 3-1 when a long ball from Lovren over the top found Origi, who loved Pickford. Then it was 4-1 on 44 minutes. Mane slotting home from an Alexander-Arnold pass from the left. And right on half-time, Everton back in it once again when a cross from the left from Bernard was headed home by Richarlison. At half-time, it's Liverpool 4, Everton 2.
So that's twice now Everton have looked completely out of this game and they have just put half a claw back in it. Richarlison on the stroke of half-time making it 4-2. But Liverpool...
I think they'll be okay.
Comfortable. Yeah. The Shaqiri goal on 17 minutes was a thing of beauty.
Oh, just Mane's first half, just like the Trent Alexander's pass, obviously, and Shaqiri's goal at the end of it. But the ball for Mane, the ball for the first goal, Origi's had a very good first half. Again, you've got to be worried from a Liverpool perspective, conceding two goals home to Everton in the first half. But Richie McCormack was saying inside, you know, is Mane the best forward in the world at the moment? And he didn't do anything to dispel that notion in the first half. He was absolutely outstanding.
It was the most Trent Alexander-Arnold ball.
Oh, he's such a, like, he's not a right back. But no. At the same time, he's redefining the position and he's making it such an important position in an attacking sense.
Yeah. He must have drilled it about, I would say, 45 yards just above head height.
Yeah, and just, it was like, it couldn't have been a more Trent Alexander, the way he arrowed it, like, kind of with an outside swerve. And Origi's been very good as well. You know, he's been kind of influential in a lot of the attacks. His finishing's been excellent. Klopp knew what he was doing, I think, unless they draw 4-4, in which case he's mad.
Well, it's one of those games where if things had backfired, he'd have big questions to answer, given that Salah was on the bench, Firmino was on the bench, Jordan Henderson was on the bench. He went with Wijnaldum and Milner and Lallana across midfield, and then Shaqiri, Mane and Origi, if you're just tuning in. But now that it works, as they head into this very busy period, it's just a thing of beauty.
Well, anyone who would give out about him not playing Salah, you know, is not watching football, because Salah, at the very least, when you're another striker, you deserve a chance, because Salah's been so poor, you know. And I would have had Origi in for games well before this, because I think a very good Origi is better than a poor Salah, as much as Salah is a better player. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's also the upside of bringing, you know, the likes of Shaqiri in and Lallana and Origi, that they do want to prove themselves. And they're playing against an Everton team. They're going to fancy their chances. And this will do wonders for Origi and Shaqiri's confidence. You know, it's been a very frustrating season for Shaqiri.
Yeah. In a team which creates lots of chances, Shaqiri's a very, very nice player.
Absolutely. And most of Liverpool's games are fairly straightforward. They create chances, they win. And
obviously he hasn't played more. I'm actually surprised we've had so much of the front three.
Yeah, he's been very loyal to them at a time when Mane's obviously had an outstanding season. Salah's been 2 or 3 out of 10, I'd say, by his standards. You know, he's been miles off it.
It's more than tiredness, isn't it? His ankle seems to be busted.
Like, we go back to Salah. I was saying last season, I didn't think Salah was playing well for a lot of last season. In the big games, his influence was minimal, but he's barely had a break. I mean, Salah went into last season without a break because he was in action in the World Cup. This off-season, he didn't really have much of a break either. And now he's carrying an injury, and I think his pace looks to be a little bit gone as well. So I've definitely sympathy for Salah, because I think we expect footballers just to be able to perform despite, so especially some of the Latin American players. It's been said about Sanchez, as much as he was a flop at Man United, like, he's gone years between playing for Chile and playing in the league, that he's had very little time off, and I think we sometimes forget that.
Well, the global calendar does not care much for the South American teams, that's for sure, or the Asian teams or the African teams. It is very Eurocentric. And if you are a player like Salah and you're trying to pirouette and turn and twist on a halfpenny, then your ankle being busted is chronic. Like a Michael Carrick type, a passer in midfield, can get away without those sharp turns and twists.
Yeah.
More so than Salah.
It happens so fast for him. But Liverpool's like lead in the Premier League is, it's one of the most baffling things ever, because Klopp will know Liverpool haven't really been at their best this season for a lot of it. But they've found a way how to win when they're not playing well. Mm. You look at the Champions League, I mean, they've played Napoli twice. Napoli are okay.
Napoli must be wondering what the big fuss about.
I know, because like both those games, Liverpool were, they didn't really deserve any more than the 1 point that they got from the two of them. They scored one goal, and Napoli are, they're okay. And, you know, Liverpool have looked kind of vulnerable enough in the European games, and just in the league, between City not really being at it and Liverpool finding a way how to win, they've this unassailable lead, so it would seem.
The closing kind of 5, 6, 7 minutes, depending on which ground we're talking about, of the majority of this evening's games. So between Liverpool and Everton, it's half time. It's 4-2 Liverpool. Chelsea, 85 minutes at Stamford Bridge, gone there against Aston Villa. Let's cross over and check in on things now. Guy Swindles standing by.
Chelsea 2, Aston Villa 1. Chelsea have been utterly dominant in this second half, but have only got one goal to show for it. Mason Mount's volley. They've had plenty of other chances. Willian sets up Abrahams, who should have scored but clipped it wide. Willian himself has hit the post with a fabulous free kick, and they could rue the missed chances. Chelsea 2, Aston Villa 1.
Abraham and Mount with the goals. Abraham's ninth league goal of the season. He's ticking along very nicely.
Yeah, that's obviously a big game for Chelsea. Eriksen's come on and done quite well for a Spurs since he's come on. Obviously, the stories in the last couple of days that they will cash out on him, that he's no real interest in staying, but there's been no lack of interest in him on the pitch, spraying a lovely ball out to the right. Spurs don't deserve anything from this game. I have to say, I thought they'd be much better than this. Man United have been at it tonight, but Chelsea certainly will be badly looking to win that game. The race for sort of fourth place at the very least is still very hard to call, I think.
Yeah. Let's check in at Old Trafford then. 7 minutes to go here. Peter Smith is there.
United 2, Spurs 1, and Spurs keeper Paolo Gazzaniga has continued his impressive display, twice extending his considerable frame to repel long range and goal-bad efforts from Daniel James. Jose Mourinho has been forced to tinker with his formation in a bid to try and find an equalising goal. Eriksen and Ndombele have been introduced from the bench in a bid to up Spurs' creativity in the final third. It's United 2, Spurs 1.
And what Mourinho said about Eriksen is he doesn't really want to play him because he wants to play the players who are going to stay. But then when needs most, he's always on the bench.
Yeah, and I guess the thing for Spurs is what money they'll get for him to bring in another player, what with him being, you know, out of contract at the end of the season. So anyone who wants to sign him, there's also the debate who wants Eriksen relative to maybe, you know, he's had a pretty poor season. Is he quite as yearned for as he was at start season? Probably not.
No.
You know, it's funny because when you're not at it, you're not at it. Even looking at him for Denmark against Ireland in the Viva Stadium.
That was a strange performance.
It was so out of sorts, you know, and looked sluggish, just looked as if he'd... And I know, I mean, like, there were sections of the crowd having a go at him about personal stories and all that, and you just wonder, is he... Maybe it is affecting him. Maybe it's just mentally he's not fully there. And his performances for Spurs, in theory, shouldn't be translating to Denmark, but to me they seem to have.
I don't know to what extent it came across on TV, but there were a couple of occasions at the game when there was a real break on, an opportunity for Denmark to break in Ireland, and he almost just checked back. And it seems that Damien Delaney was on commentary alongside Nathan, and we almost just looked at each other at the same time as if to say, that's odd that he checked back there. Now maybe it's because they were at nil all and they didn't need to win the game, but it was still just an odd thing. On the rare occasion there's a break on, it was I was at the 5-1 game as well. Very different players.
Very different. When our gung ho Cavalier Ireland came unstuck, but I don't know where he's going to go, because I think Mourinho loves to sign players, and he'll. I think that was Eriksen playing a truly awful ball, actually. Mourinho will want, even if they get 50 million or something for him.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It'll be interesting how that plays out, because we have only a few months until the off-season.
Luke Shaw is just about to come on for Manchester. He looks big again. He looks big again.
If Luke Shaw weren't a footballer, what weight would he be, you know?
He does just look like he's carrying too much weight. He's coming on now, 86 minutes on the clock. Lingard is going off.
Yeah.
So that's United 2-1 up anyway. We'll come back to their performance because they were good. And Miguel Delaney of the London Independent is at Old Trafford. He's going to take a call once we get into full time. But they've been good, United. Really good this evening.
They have. They've been the better team from the get-go. Spurs got a goal sort of out of nothing. Gave away a criminally bad penalty. And Marie, in fairness to Mourinho, he does have plenty of work to do with that defence. And Vertonghen left back is fish out of water stuff as well. As much as Ashley Young playing left back, is Vertonghen is clearly not a left back, and Manchester United have tried to target that.
Two quick updates, and then I want to get your thoughts on Three Ireland and their decision not your new sponsorship, and the general air of gloom and doom ahead of the financial records being announced tomorrow, the accounts being publicised tomorrow. So Southampton against Norwich continues. Peter Hood's there.
Southampton 2, Norwich City 1. The substitutions are ringing around the ground as both managers try to keep and attain whatever they want respectively. Southampton still lead from those first half goals, but Pukki pulled that goal back, and when he gets the ball, Norwich threaten every time, but his service has been limited by a cumbersome midfield from Norwich City. It's Southampton 2, Norwich 1.
And then over to Wolves against West Ham. Alex Winter, there's been a goal.
It's Wolves 2, West Ham 0, and Wolves have sealed the points thanks to substitute Patrick Cotroni. They broke down the left-hand channel. The ball eventually falling to Cotroni at the top of the area, and his right foot strike rolled into the right-hand corner of the goal past West Ham's David Martin. Wolves 2, West Ham 0.
Yeah, so that is where we are. We'll bring you full times in a few moments when the 7:30 games go full time. Yeah, they were 7:30 games. Liverpool, Everton 8:15. So Three Ireland, the FAI's main sponsors, Johnny Three, they've decided not to renew their deal with the association. They released a statement today confirming the arrangement with the FAI will run out in July 2020. That was from their chief commercial officer, Elaine Carey. She said, Three's been a supporter of Irish football for 10 years, €30 million invested in the game through our sponsorship. Three, they say, has made the decision not to renew. They go on to say, having reviewed our full sponsorship portfolio, we've decided to consolidate our sponsorship investment in the area of music. At Three, we are entirely focused on supporting the Irish men's team through what we hope will be an exciting and successful qualification for the Euros and on the go, and the Irish women's team and their qualification as well for UEFA Women's European Championship. We also wish the Irish teams at every level the very best in the future. The timing of this is just too much to be a coincidence on the eve of what everybody says will be a dreadful afternoon tomorrow for the association.
Yeah, you know, and you're thinking as well, like, I've such high hopes for the Irish team of Stephen Kenny's era. I think it might backfire, but I think it could work out spectacularly well. And for Three to be associated with these young up-and-coming players, you know, at a time when Obafemi was starting at the weekend and he's like fourth in the pecking order for an Irish under 21 striker, which is staggering, really. Aaron Connolly started at the weekend. Afolabi's doing well. All these young players, Troy Parrott and so on and so forth. No, I mean, the timing, I don't know how bad this thing is going to be tomorrow. The indications are it's going to be very, very bad. It just shows when you have such a dysfunctional organisation how things can get this bad. And, you know, there was John Delaney spoke so convincingly about the debt being out by 2020, and now 2030 seems possibly avaricious. And
now there's reports of UEFA suggesting you might want to sell your stake in the Aviva Stadium, which would be to their eternal shame if that happens.
Yeah, this, by the sounds of it, you know, the IRFU aren't mad keen on that, and the very nature of the agreement in that kind of it's a 60-year type lease, I think. Which wasn't really trumpeted as accordingly by the FAI up until now.
No, that was the first I heard. It's a 60-year lease.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like,
well, the reports today ahead of tomorrow are that FAI staff are braced for the worst. That phrase has been used in a few newspaper reports today, and there's talk of axing key programs on top of job cuts and then potentially pay cuts. We don't know, but certainly some redundancies seem to be in the offing, and then the axing of key programmes at a time where the economy has been good, the team, you know, like even Keenan O'Neill, things didn't go brilliantly, but there were good attendances, there was money, there was TV money. Just that things have been mismanaged this badly is extraordinary. You were talking to one or two sources in the FAI?
Yeah, and I know Shane Ross has mentioned, and people have mixed opinions on Shane Ross in terms of he's kind of overseeing a bit of a messy situation here. And as much as, you know, FIFA and UEFA, their governance doesn't really allow for meddling by governments. Mm. At the same time, you can see why Sport Ireland, you know, the loan from John Delaney in 2017 or whatever, that did contravene Sports Ireland's sort of agreement with the FAI. So you can kind of see why Ross is in place. I just, you know, just I feel so sorry for the people in the FAI who probably for the last sort of whatever 6 months have been ashamed to tell somebody. If you're asking, what do you work at? Oh, I work in the FAI, you know, and it should be the pinnacle of someone's career in administration and in football. And we have some very good young coaches in the FAI, and I think Irish football in many ways is in on the cusp of some very exciting times. I think the League of Ireland is on the up. I think our underage teams have been performing outstandingly well. We, you know, we're still in with a chance of qualifying for the Euros. And we're utterly bankrupt off the pitch. And it's sad because, you know, clubs waiting on payments for doing up their grounds, be they League of Ireland clubs or your club next door, and, you know, have no part in this mess. And it's very, very sad. And, you know, I just feel an awful lot of sympathy for the people in the FAI that hadn't really any part in its demise.
And what is the situation with the League of Ireland and what they need from the FAI or where they are with the FAI next year?
So this is a mad thing. The league didn't know what was going to happen next year because there was obviously talk of an All-Ireland League, which would have necessitated an abridged season next season.
Yeah.
The All-Ireland League now, in the time frame anyway, doesn't look like it's going to happen. But obviously the FAI was overseeing the League of Ireland. The League of Ireland was moving away from that and kind of setting up a bit like NIFL in the Northern Irish Football League, in that you've kind of the clubs will run the league and the FAI won't have quite the say it had anymore and won't be overseeing it. And the FAI has done a bad job, I would argue. But I would imagine they're just waiting and seeing now what happens, because there's nobody. Paul Cook has come in who would be good for the League of Ireland. I think he's come in an interim role. I think the League of Ireland clubs would welcome that, but being honest, I've no idea what's going to happen, and clubs are already back in training this week, you know, and you know the prize money level in the League of Ireland, Joe, is a scandal to my mind. And if for example Limerick have been deducted a load of points, if Limerick get a licence next season, which at the moment this club, I don't see why they would get a licence, you would need a replacement club to come in. What club in their right mind would join the League of Ireland at the moment? So rumours about Cabinteely, I don't know what's going on there. Shamrock Rovers B might be coming in. What club would come into the League of Ireland with no financial incentive and the FAI looking like a complete basket case? You know, so it's depressing, and I'm looking at the League of Ireland signings made by clubs, and you know, Lee Grace staying at Shamrock Rovers, Dundalk making good signings, and I'm very excited about next season. Even the first division, the signings that have been made, lots of stuff that's very positive. Coming back from an FAI Cup final, which drew a good crowd, was a very engaging game. We've Jack Byrne, Graham Burke, all these good players in the league. I think it's a very exciting time. And at the same time, the FAI, which deemed it to be a difficult child, is in a horrendous shape. With we don't even know how bad it is.
No, tomorrow is going to be.
That's the sad thing.
Very interesting. Will they put someone forward to talk about it or having the press conference? I presume they must be. They have to in light of this, but I don't know.
Yeah,
they're not just going to email this around, are they?
I honestly don't know, but it just goes to show, as much as the GAA and you were kind of sighing heavily earlier on about the latest task force, whatever it's called, the fixtures calendar review task force, and the GAA could definitely enter the Guinness Book of Records for subcommittees with many letters, but the GAA is a democracy and it bloody well works quite well compared to what the FAI had become.
Yeah, they're poles apart. So starting to go full times in a few of the games. We'll bring you reports in just a few moments' time, but it's gone full time at Old Trafford. Manchester United have beaten Spurs by 2-1. That is a massive sigh of relief for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. The last thing he needed at the moment was Jose Mourinho coming in and winning with Spurs. And when they went to shake hands there, I didn't want to interrupt you because you were in full flow.
Oh yeah.
You were the voice of the people, Johnny. But they shook hands and Mourinho gave Solskjaer a alpha male tap on the cheek, a little tap on the face, and Solskjaer, understanding, I can't let you do this to me. Ruffled Mourinho's hair.
Yeah.
A little rubbing the head as he walked off. Mourinho, it's like politicians when they walk out on stage. It's very important in these debates.
Yeah.
The handshake's good.
Your body language and all that.
Because the strongest position to be in is on the, as the viewer looks at it, the left-hand side, because your handshake is over theirs.
Mm.
But if they do that, you've got to two-arm them.
Yeah,
these are the tricks of the trade, Johnny.
We saw this today in North Korea, the significance of Kim Jong-un on horseback with his good lady behind him. They're like, this is completely staged, you know, and all political stuff is staged. But in terms, like, Mourinho's political pantomime, and there's probably an element of the patronising about his thing with Solskjaer. But Man United, I watched the game because I had a bet on Spurs, and I called it wrong. Man United played like a team possessed, and they deserve to win by more. And I'm just like, where was this performance against Villa and Sheffield United? Because they were light years apart. But some of the players may have played with a little bit to prove they're like, we're going to show Mourinho up here.
Well, I think it probably helped as well. McTominay in a midfield position.
He was good today.
Helps protect the back four more than Fred and Pereira combination does.
Absolutely.
And then he went with pace. I mean, he put in Mason Greenwood. He put in Lingard. Mata played the last day. And suddenly, if you've got Greenwood, Mata... Sorry, not Mata. If you've got Greenwood, Lingard... Rashford through the middle, and who was on the left-hand side? It wasn't Martial. I'll tell you now, 1 second.
They had both James was playing the left.
So again, that's even more speed.
And his pace, he is James, very, very quick. And
That front four.
Spurs back four is not the back four Mourinho will want if at the start of next season, put it that way. And I just thought that in midfield they were well outplayed. So I think Mourinho will realise he's an awful lot to do, but it was a big win for Man United. I mean, I don't know where Man United are. I mean, that performance would suggest they have a good chance of finishing the top four, but every other performance this season wouldn't. I don't know.
It's two steps forward, one step back, three steps forward, two steps back, kind of a job for them at the moment. Full time there, 2-1 United. Chelsea have beaten Aston Villa by 2-1. Leicester, keep it going, keep the show on the road. They have beaten Watford by 2-0 this evening, Leicester. Madison with a goal in the 90th minute and Vardy with a penalty on 55 minutes. So Leicester keep winning. That was at home to Watford this evening. Southampton have beaten Norwich 2-1. I'll check scores there.
Just got a text in there from
Bertrand. Yeah.
Derry City fan. I don't know if I should be positive or go follow provincial rugby when I listen to you. So that's from a Derry City fan.
As in, he's so grimmed out by the current landscape, he might go and follow rugby instead.
Yeah, because I think in the League of Ireland now, and you look at like what Bowes are doing and investment in Rovers, and Dundalk have a bit of cash, Pats of new owners, Pats of new manager and an owner that's doing some good work there. Derry City, a bit of money behind them, the club is back, and there's so much to be positive about in the League of Ireland. And it's just unfortunate that there was such a poverty of belief from the top, because I firmly believe in the League of Ireland. If Brexit comes into play under the rules of FIFA at the moment, you can transfer a minor to another country. You can do it within the EU, but if Brexit comes into play, no minors can sign for English clubs. That's simple as that, as the rules are at the moment. So there would have to be a sort of an academy developed here. And what annoys me as well, Joe, is that the money that's invested in football in this country is very small, and we don't look at... What if we had academies or clubs and we had proper systems that wouldn't necessitate players having to leave at 15 and 16 for years and years, which I don't think is ideal for any kid, really. No. And I think when we need lobbying of politicians, we're going to have a general election in the next few months, when we need lobbying of politicians to say the League of Ireland and Irish football is something that really deserves your backing, who's going to do that lobbying for us? They've enough to be doing,
A bit more going on.
So it's demoralising, really.
On that cheery note, 54 minutes in the clock, Liverpool 4-2 up on Everton. Miguel Delaney will join us hopefully from Old Trafford, and we'll go around the grounds to the reporters as well. Just 1 second.
Paddy Power, as much a part of Irish football as hoofing it up to Johnny Walters.
Okay, let's go over to Old Trafford and hear from Peter Smith.
United 2, Spurs 1. There was no great pre-match reception for Jose Mourinho, whose mood was dimmed even further when Marcus Rashford fired in an early goal with a powerful angle drive. Dele Alli produced a Bergkamp Cantona-style piece of control to level before the break, but Rashford claimed his second of the night when he clinically dispatched a penalty after his run into the box had been impeded by Moussa Sissoko. United 2, Spurs 1.
Now next to Stamford Bridge, Chelsea had Aston Villa this evening. Guy Swindle's there.
Chelsea 2, Aston Villa 1. First half that was pretty level. Abrahams gave Chelsea the lead. His 11th Premier League goal of the season. Trezeguet equalised just before the break. But in the second half, it was all Chelsea. But the only thing they had to show for it was a fine finish from Mason Mount in the 48th minute. After that, they hit the post and missed a hatful of chances. And in fact, Villa could have pinched a point at the end. Kepa's fine save denying them. Chelsea 2, Aston Villa 1.
Abraham, 11 league goals, that is impressive. Let's go to Leicester. They had to keep winning, and they did against Watford. Derek Clark.
Full time, Leicester City 2, Watford 0. Jamie Vardy's 14th goal in as many home games, and a late James Maddison strike sees the Foxes return to second in the table. Vardy scored from the spot on 55 minutes after Adam Messina gave away a penalty for an arm in the face of Johnny Evans. The host dominated for large spells and were rewarded in stoppage time. James Maddison bustling his way through before firing past Foster. It's finished here, Leicester City 2, Watford 0.
Like the Vardy. I mean,
it's going to be the oldest golden boot winner in history of the Premier League.
The motivation of, you look at Vardy and you're like, he does look like a player at times that progresses up the levels. Like, he doesn't do amazing stuff, but like, talk about like a born goal scorer. Once he's in the box, you know, does he ever score from like 25 yards? But he's always pestering defenders. 14 goals in 14 home games. Brendan Rodgers, I know, like, we have the deluded Brendan Twitter account, and people will have a go at like some of the stuff he comes out with, but that's an amazing job. Like, Leicester were, they weren't much shorter a price to win the league this year than they were under Ranieri. Like, nobody gave them a chance, and they're, as much as Liverpool are kind of still a little bit clear, Leicester have been absolutely outstanding, and Vardy's he's just a role model for any striker who thinks that he mightn't be able, like Dele Alli, just the way he's climbed up the ranks.
Pre-match meals of espressos, double espressos, Red Bulls and omelettes, that's his pre-match meal.
I do love a double espresso. We had a meal last night at home, and I think it's like a normal thing to do after a meal to have a double espresso, but it was probably about 9:30, 10:00, and the company were sort of saying, my company, as in the people that were with me, were like, you can't drink a double espresso.
Sleep.
But shout out to a big Juve fan, Marco in Terra Madre, which is a great...
Don't be trying to look for your free meals.
Great little, absolutely, I never even thought of that. But he drinks 8 double espressos a day, and he's a proper Italian, and he's always vibrant.
Yeah.
Always vibrant. That's probably not a good idea, though.
Miguel Delaney of the London Independent is at Old Trafford. Thanks for waiting patiently. Hello.
Hey, lad.
So, I mean, we didn't see all of this, but certainly the first half, there was a tempo about United that was much, much better than in recent times. And when you looked at the team sheet and saw Ashley Young in and McTominay in, and then the pace of that front four, it's not overly surprising that they've done okay tonight. What kind of measure of performance are we saying they put in?
It was the best I've seen them play for some time. Maybe since the Chelsea 4-0 here, which it was at. But actually, I think a bit better than that, a bit more cohesive overall. Well, I mean, this is the oddity what United have to say, and it's why I wouldn't really get too far ahead of ourselves this result, in that we've seen the situation a fair bit, even under Mourinho, where the team has looked weathered and it's in a big game and they put in a response, which is often a sign of a team that's not fully there but has a point to prove. And also, ultimately, this is true of both teams, actually, that it was a bit of a harem-scarem game, and ultimately a match between two teams who didn't really have that much of an idea about how to play, or their own idea of how to play, who were both were dependent on individual moments of brilliance. It's just the United's individuals looked that bit more fired up. I think that was maybe the bigger question. Was this, I think I put this on Twitter and in my report, actually, for the Independent tonight, but was this a sign that the players love Solskjaer and want him to stay, or do they still have it in for Mourinho, or something in between?
I think that's a good point, yeah, because, I mean, where was the performances for Solskjaer in the last couple of games where they were absolutely insipid, but...
Do those personnel changes not explain a lot? Like, yeah. Young is a major improvement. I mean, there's potential, obviously, in Williams, but Young is a big improvement in terms of just a bit of solidity. McTominay sitting in front of the back four helps a lot. And then Lingard, I don't know how he played Miguel, but obviously he's got a lot more pace than Mata.
I think he's been a little bit harsh in that. I think Man United sort of did have a game plan tonight. As much as it was probably a fairly straightforward game plan, it pretty much involved attacking Spurs at pace, and it pretty much won the game.
Isn't that the issue, though? It's a reactive game plan.
Yeah.
And this is the fundamental problem with United, that because they're one of the wealthiest clubs in the world, one of the biggest clubs in England, teams aren't going to play them in a way that suits that football, which is reactive football, which is about suddenly, like the goal came, which came from Lingard kind of winning a loose ball and Rashford lashing onto it. They're a team that needs to learn how to be on the front foot to impose a game. And that's something we don't see. And it's why I say they're kind of dependent on individual moments. So while this was, I think, an impressive performance in and of itself and an impressive win in the circumstances, the grand irony is, even though it's probably saved Solskjaer's job until the new year, I don't think it's necessarily the strongest argument to actually keep him around.
Yeah, in fairness, like you're on about being on the front foot, they don't have the midfielders really, Miguel, I think. You know, they're not able to impose themselves on cagey tactical games, which tonight wasn't, and I don't know where they go from there in that regard, but they do have Pogba, obviously, to come back, and I think
comes back.
it will be interesting, but at the moment, their midfield just doesn't. Their midfield is still just very functional at best.
Sorry, Miguel, something to throw to you on the back of that then, is I think Manchester United fans are almost at a weird stage with the team where this is obviously a higher class of debate, but you know, for Ireland and any manager, you know, Trapattoni onwards, it's like, well, do we have the players or is it the manager? I think United fans have now watched so many years of various United teams and a lot of these same players, two steps forward, three steps back, and then a good result here and then a bad result there, and then new manager comes in and they play well for a time and then they revert to what they are. I'm not actually sure a lot of Man United fans know how good this team should be.
Yeah, I completely get that. That's absolutely true. And again, it's a bit of, I know this is a cliche by now, but it's like a Liverpool in the 90s situation. And I take Johnny's point there and agree with it that they lack proper quality in the centre. And I think, and really, if Pogba's in that team, it makes them look very different on both the team sheet and also on the pitch, because he's essentially the only player who can play the sort of perceptive passes that is really required for Solskjaer's idealised fast football. Although then there are questions to ask whether Solskjaer should develop something that's a bit more adaptable. I mean, I think it's one of the fair criticisms of Solskjaer as well, that his football approach just seems a little bit basic, and he often describes broad characteristics like fast play intensity rather than actually anything actually kind of a definable style of play. But yeah, completely. I think that's why Pogba remains such a big issue. But then, of course, there are questions there as well, given that there's a lot of talk that Solskjaer's getting fed up with him and would be willing to sell him in January.
Right. Yeah, that's not surprising. I mean, Pogba, to my mind, should have been gone. I thought he was a bit of a, like, he's been a bit of a very unsettling influence, I think. And, you know, his relationship with Mourinho was quite toxic. But just on Mourinho, Miguel, I thought, like, he didn't emerge very well tonight, because tactically, if you were to look at that game in hindsight, you're thinking, how do we win that game? We probably sit back a bit deeper and you know, take them on the break. But they were absolutely battered in midfield. Got a goal kind of out of nothing, really. And I don't know what the goal expectancy was, but they would have been well beaten in the game. And after three quick victories during his kind of reign, this was a massive reality check, I think, in terms of where they need to go.
Yeah, totally. And as I said at the top there, I mean, it was basically two teams dependent on individual football, and Spurs all the more. So I didn't actually... It looked like Spurs really tonight looked like some of his kind of most tepid United teams at Old Trafford, fittingly enough, in that it was a bit of a chaotic defence, and I have heard he wants to basically upgrade every single member of the defence bar Alderweireld. And also, as you say, a midfield, it didn't really work. It was surprisingly persisted with Winkson to soak over so long, especially since that's like a partnership that's really been done since last season. And it's interesting that he doesn't seem to fully trust Ndombele yet either. Mm. But yeah, and again, I mean, and this is a recurring issue in Mourinho's career now. In a football world where the top level is basically defined and set by teams that play highly coordinated, highly constructed attacking football, which is probably one of the hardest things in the game to really perfect now. Like, you hear a lot of players going to talk about how it's basically like they now have to learn off the sort of instructions under managers like Klopp and Guardiola that NFL quarterbacks have to do. It's getting that intricate. And like, Mourinho's approach comes from 10 years before that, which is almost, you know, a few light years in terms of the tactical development of the game. And I think that's going to be a recurring issue with Spurs as well, for all the kind of emotional impact he might have on this team.
I think it's already ominous if he wants to upgrade three of that back four, and Daniel Levy is the man he's going to have to do that in conjunction with. My goodness.
Yeah.
Dele Alli looks to be having a good time if they're looking for positives.
Yeah, that's true. And as well, to be fair to Mourinho, that's very much a sign of his potential positive impact on the right sort of individual. In that, like, I mean, this has been something we discussed a lot in his career over the past few years. the modern player doesn't take to him, but some still do. Mm. I think Dele Alli is precisely that sort of character. And, you know, I think very, very quickly Mourinho identified him as kind of a personal project in that way. The way he's brought him up in press conferences, the way he's talked about him, and the way he's treated him privately. You know, one of the first things he said to any of the Spurs players was that line, "Are you Dele or Dele's brother?" And then Dele, be Dele.
I do love, there's a lovely moment in the Liverpool game here where the ball is played down the line. Wijnaldum is basically defending it. He's won the battle with Keane. Keane is fouling him for the space of maybe 3 or 4 seconds, and he's just tugging at his jersey. Wijnaldum is on the ground. He looks at Keane as if to say, "What are you at?" And Keane just kind of puts his hands around him and say, "Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm just a bit frustrated here." Wijnaldum then puts his hand around Keane, and they basically embrace and they get on and play. Lovely sporting play. And some of Liverpool's football here is, you know, we're talking about this where Spurs and Man United are at. This Liverpool team on paper is far from outstanding, but they're playing with a freedom and belief and confidence that's completely at odds with a set of players who probably have a lot to be disenfranchised about this season, that they just haven't been playing. And whatever Klopp does, he keeps them happy. And this performance has been an absolute joy to watch.
Yeah, it's a major fill-up given the team sheet. So, Miguel, I know, I'm sure your report's probably already up on the London Independent website or getting there very quickly. Anything else you want to throw at us from the game that jumped out at you, given that you were kind of keeping half an eye on it?
One of the last things I saw was actually Solskjaer rather patronisingly patting Mourinho on the head.
I saw that, yeah.
As he went. I don't think there's actually too much love lost between them.
No.
There's been a few little side swipes. And I put it in my piece, actually, in the preview of this game, that Solskjaer had kind of complained to senior figures at United that now he had to listen to Mourinho, you know, criticising him on television. Saying things are worse on television. Mm. So I think there's probably a bit of a, you know, personal vindication there as well.
Well, Mourinho patted him on the cheek, so he had to alpha male him back. So he went for the
double
ruffle of the hair.
Going on, yeah.
You can't lose that fight. Listen, we'll let you go. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Cheers, lads. Thank you.
Cheers. Miguel Delaney there, who's on the line from Old Trafford. So that's a 2-1 win for United, which is no harm at all. Lads, I'll be amazed if Mourinho sticks with that useless effing paperweight Harry Winks. Too small. No goal threat, no physical threat. Can't tackle. Bad move.
Big news. Big news is in.
This is the FAI
tomorrow? It's actually all grand.
It's not that big a deal.
It's massive.
Is it?
They've moved it from tomorrow to Friday. Yes, so it's like tomorrow will be absolutely grand. And it's like, if you're dealing with some sort of bad crap in your life, just put it off for another day. And then it's like, it'll be grand. And tomorrow's another day.
So they say, and it's an official statement, that they've moved the announcement of the 2018 accounts and the revised 2017 and restated 2016 accounts to Friday morning instead of tomorrow morning. And they say the board has taken this decision to facilitate the signing off of the accounts on Thursday. And I think this is not a bad thing, and to have the presence of the entire board at a press conference on Friday.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Thursday's scheduled press conference will now be moved to noon on Friday.
Here's one for you, right, Joseph Malloy.
Careful.
So you mentioned Michael O'Leary earlier on, and such a shrewd guy and all that. Michael O'Leary, post-9/11, bought a hell of a lot of airlines because he's like, I'm getting them at a cut price.
Right.
At a time when people can be very stupid and they thought that they shouldn't fly as much now because of one bad day and, you know, horrendous day, but like obviously planes were probably never safer thereafter. Anyway, so O'Leary capitalised on that kind of herd mentality of stupidity, bought a load of planes. Is it a good time to now become the sponsor of the Irish football team in light of this Troy Parrott, Aaron Connolly, all these players coming in? You're going to get it at a cut price. The FAI will be like, listen, we're happy to, oh yeah, come in, we'll make you tea, we'll make you coffee. Could be something to think about.
I feel like your question led the witness there, Johnny.
Case closed.
Yes, I think it is.
So who would, you know, who's going to come in?
Yeah, no, be interesting. I don't think they'll be short of offers, actually.
Yeah.
I know, like, the FAI brand is toxic right now, but the team, and for all the reasons you mentioned there, is still appetizing and you still reach a lot of people, and there's lots you can do with the players who are still popular, and Stephen Kenny, all that. Yeah, no, I think they'll have no... I think, anyway, I'm not an expert in these things, but I wouldn't think they should have any trouble. The economy's in decent state.
Economy's in great state, yeah.
Michael O'Leary, when he had his news agent shop, way, way, way back.
I know this story.
It's such a classic, on Christmas Day.
So Christmas Day, he opens it. I sang correct on this, but I think it was somewhere on the North Circular Road around, what's that pub, Hanlon's, is it? For some reason, I have that in my head. I've read the book, which was written by Alan Ruddock, the late Alan Ruddock, fantastic book of Michael O'Leary.
Yeah.
It's one of these books somebody lent me, and I've obviously lost it or whatever, but you know the way you lent a book and then you lend it to someone else unbeknownst to the guy.
Let's stay on track here, Johnny.
Anyway, so Michael O'Leary opens up his convenience shop on the corner on Christmas Day, and a load of people are coming in want to buy batteries, so he sold them batteries at treble the normal price. And he went home, apparently he went home, like, and it was described that he had so much money in his pocket, he's like, I think I've nailed this. But the one thing about O'Leary, Joe, and this should, like, it's all these sliding door moments, mm-hmm. but for the obstinance of Tony Ryan, O'Leary told Tony Ryan, it's still in the same book, he said, Ryanair is a complete basket case, get rid of it, it's no chance. And Ryan was so stubborn, he said, no, I've invested loads of money, I'm persevering. So O'Leary's like, okay, but on the off chance this works out, I want 25% of your profits, more or less indefinitely. Look at him now.
Yeah, nicely done. So Liverpool 4-2 up, we'll take a break.
Paddy Power, as much a part of Irish football as hoofing it up to Johnny Walters.
Okay, let's check in at Anfield. We have Shane Pennington there.
Well, it's Liverpool 4, Everton 2, but it's Everton who created the chances in this second half and really should be back in this game. First of all, it was Richarlison who headed straight to Adrian from Sigurdsson's corner, and then Tom Davis with a 20-yard effort, forcing a good save out of Liverpool's number 2 as well. Liverpool going forward haven't offered really that much in the second half, surprisingly, considering they scored 4 in the first, but from their point of view, it's job done for them as long as they keep it tight at the back. It's Liverpool 4, Everton 2.
Miguel had a bit of a pep in his step there, but imagine if you were doing a game at 8:15 trying to get that in pre-deadline as a journalist, it'd be an absolute nightmare.
I think it's late for fans, isn't it, as well?
It's late for fans, and, you know, like, God be it with the dying days of print or whatever, but, you know, sub editors still have to edit a copy, and games being over at 10:05 is an absolute nightmare.
Yeah, 7:45 in the Champions League for me always just worked.
I love 7:45. I just can't knock it.
8:00 is just that bit too late.
When I was a kid and we started going to the odd NFL game in New York, I couldn't get over. So the game beyond at like 9 p.m. and I'd be coming out and it's like 12:15. I was like, how are people playing professional sport at midnight? But I don't know. It seemed normal to the Americans. Then again, the Americans they're a different lot.
They really are, Johnny. Very true.
You can carry a gun along the streets. You can buy cigarettes in the pharmacy. But you can't have a bet. Do you know, it's mad. Like, it's a mad place.
How do they all bet? Like, I mean, the average person, how are they all betting?
It's, you know, like Moe in The Simpsons where they're ringing up the local barman. It's not actually far removed from that. A lot of the money goes through, I think, like places like Aruba and all that. But it is now finally being legalised in various states. And that's why a lot of the bookmakers over here are trying to really tap into that market because it's so big.
Yeah, okay.
And like, obviously the betting on the NFL and basketball is big over there, but America is, it's a myriad of contradictions.
Ah, sure, listen. Now, a few other...
is that for the rest of the 3 minutes we have left? Everton threatening a goal here. It'd be some crack if they got one.
Yeah, still 10 minutes to go. This is the other thing. We're off the air at 10. These games now go way past 10.
It'll be, when they've the results in the paper, it's like Liverpool L, Everton L, because it was too late. And that will be in some of the papers tomorrow.
Wolves against West Ham is another game that has long finished at this stage. Let's hear from Alex Winter.
It's finished Wolves 2, West Ham 0. Leander Dendonka with his first league goal of the season in the first half before Patrick Cutrone made the point save with 4 minutes remaining. First it was João Moutinho's corner that West Ham didn't deal with, allowing Dendonka to poke home from close range. And then with time running down, a break up the left-hand channel saw the ball fall to Cutrone on top of the area and he slid home with his right foot. Robert Snodgrass had West Ham's best chance, but he missed his kick when clean through on goal. They finished Wolves 2, West Ham 0.
I just have to mention this briefly. Trent Alexander-Arnold, just go home. Just go home. We've had enough of this nonsense. He's just done another obscene, past the watershed, X-rated. It wasn't him. It was actually Henderson. But it was like, it was an unbelievable pass. And Mane missed it. But what, Liverpool's football. It was such a Trent Alexander-Arnold pass, it actually wasn't him.
Jordan Henderson.
I think it was Henderson, wasn't it? Yeah, so obviously Henderson's come on.
Oh, Henderson, come on.
For me, Manny's got a score there. It's like,
yeah,
he knows
it. Miss. It was a bad miss.
4-2, just a little bit edgy. They were 2-0 up against Brighton at the weekend. Around this time, Brighton scored and made it interesting.
Yes, Henderson came on for Lallana, so that was him. Finally then, St. Mary's, Southampton against Norwich, Peterhood.
Southampton 2, Norwich City 1. The home side achieve back-to-back wins for the first time in 250 days and move out of the bottom three, courtesy of goals from Danny Ings and Ryan Bertrand in the first half. They dominated really throughout, but Pukki brought Norwich back into the game, and when he did, there was some late pressure which saw the Saints hang on a little at the end, but in the end, it finished Southampton 2, Norwich 1.
There we are, good win for Southampton. So that is pretty much us done. You were about to say something there, were you?
No, just good to see Shane Long, kind of. He's still hovering around the background there. We've paucity of strikers, so he's playing quite well. Obafemi on the bench. Lots of drama tonight, Joe. Lots of drama. We got through the hours.
Sure did.
We didn't have an awful lot of help tonight.
No, we were just faffing around most of it.
Next week, we'll discuss America.
Earlier on, we asked you to identify Mystery Voice. It was...
It's not going to end well, you know.
Tough one.
Andy Moran. Mm. You're kidding me. I thought that was Paul Gascoigne earlier. Play
it's
that
not
going
to end well, you know.
Give it to me again.
It's not going
to
end well, you know.
I just thought that was Gaza. Can you hear that?
I can. Played under 14 Roscommon and District League with Andy Moran.
Give us Gaza one more time there.
It's not going to end well, you know.
That's Paul Gascoigne.
It's Andy Moran.
I honestly, when we do,
so we have to wrap up and it's Andy
Moran, but it's actually Paul Gascoigne.
This show is not going to end
it's
well.
It's not going to end well, you know.
That is the most Gaza thing I've ever heard.
Andy Moran compared to Gaza.
On the face of it, I wouldn't have thought. Niall Murphy somehow knew that was Andy Moran, not Gaza. And he's won a pair of tickets to our roadshow in Galway next Wednesday. Niall, we'll see you there, good man. Offtheball.com/events if you want to come along for tickets. Only a very few left. OTB AM tomorrow, 7:30. And we're back on the radio tomorrow at 7 in the evening. Tom Dunn is next.
Paddy Power. As much a part of Irish football as hoofing it up to Johnny Walters.